This is the Blaze Radio On Demand.
Get a Casper mattress and get a great night's sleep. Try it for 100 nights risk-free. Go to casper.com/Glenn and use the promo code Glenn. Get $50 towards the purchase of your mattress. Terms and conditions do apply.
Hello, America, and welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. On the Blaze Radio, we have Reform This. It is with Dr. Zudi Jasser. He is one of the most outspoken voices inside Islam of saying the United States government is playing footsie with all of the wrong people. He is a reformer, and Islam, as it is known in much of the Middle East, needs to be reformed. It's why so many people come here, and they are petrified of the people that we are allowing in. I wanted to talk to him about the so-called Muslim ban and get his take on what Donald Trump did over the weekend. We go to Dr. Zudi Jasser right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Zudi, welcome to the program. Glad you're here, sir.
Glenn, it's great to be with you. Thank you for having me, and thank you for letting me work on reforming this.
I will tell you, Zudi, you are you're a hero to me because. We all know what happens to those who speak out against radical Islam, especially if you're in Islam and you are a proud Muslim. You have been warning that the United States is in with the wrong guys for a very long time. First, let me ask you this question. Has anyone from the Trump administration reached out to you yet to bring your organization into the fold?
Not yet. I think, they're obviously been very busy the last week, so maybe we'll give him a pass on that. I certainly have worked with a number of the folks he's appointed.
Yes.
So I look forward to helping them navigate these waters. And as we saw in the last few days, they got to get ahead of the messaging game because the left will use identity politics and exploit us Muslims whenever possible for their own benefit.
Okay, so Zudi, tell me what your thoughts are about this so-called, what the media is calling a Muslim ban.
It's not a Muslim ban. I mean, it's absurd. They're pausing from seven countries that Obama had already listed as hot spots. I would have added, if you're going to start, I would have added Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Pakistan, at least, since those are probably the primary cauldrons of radical Islamism. But, having said that, the bottom line is that it's important to realize it's a pause. It's not a ban. That America was founded in a battle against theocracy. And to say that currently folks coming in had been vetted is absurd. The vetting that the Obama administration used was a anti-terrorism, anti-violent extremism vetting, which included no ideology. And I actually debated last night on Fox the head of the International Rescue Commission, and he couldn't come up with one evidence that they're vetting against jihadism or Islamism. So the pause is necessary, but the implementation has certainly been haphazard the last few days. And if you get this wrong and we lose the messaging, America should never lose its beacon on a hill as being that place where people come for refuge, for freedom and liberty. We don't want theocrats here, and it's very pro-Muslim, pro-modern Islam to say that we don't want theocrats here. And, for people like Senator Schumer to say that, to shed false tears and say that somehow this is going to feed into the anti-American narrative is absurd when Muslim countries like Saudi Arabia have accepted zero refugees in. So to say that it's anti-Muslim to just put a pause on a very anemic program anyway from the Obama administration is absurd.
Zudi, why doesn't Saudi Arabia take any Muslim refugees?
Two things that should be clear to Americans, which is number one is they are anti-Islamist as far as the grassroots viral movement. They claim to be against the Brotherhood. And they realize the ideology that they're spreading and how it'll bite them in the rear end. So while they're with us, they're the firefighters. They're also the arsonists. So they get it. Secondly, the refugees get it also. They don't want to go to places as bad or worse than what they're fighting for freedom in Syria for. So there's two things there that make it pretty much a mutual hate between those, the majority of refugees who really want to be free and away from the dual genocide happening from ISIS and from the Assad and Iranian regime.
Okay, so I know this would be, a pure guess, but, we let 15,000 or 100, let's just say a round number, we let 100,000 people in, and they're Muslim refugees. From that part of the world, any idea how many, what percentage have been radicalized?
Well, this is the key question, and this is what we've been screaming from the rooftops for the last 8 years, actually, 5 years, obviously, since the revolution. But studies have shown in Europe 20 to 25% of refugees have sympathies for ISIS, sympathies. Now, they're not radical as far as, how do you define radical? Are they militant who are trying to commit acts of violence? No, they'll pass the muster for, do they belong to ISIS? No. But just as in the Cold War, these are ISIS sympathizers. They believe in the cause. They believe in Islamic State, a caliphate, et cetera. So when you ask, is the Trump administration engaging us? They haven't yet. And we want them to use our Muslim Reform Movement document, which is a two-page declaration that we stand against the core principles of an Islamic state. And if Muslims believe in that, which is true for 70 to 80% that are coming here, then we should welcome them. And actually what that'll do is Americans, when they see refugees coming that embrace those principles and they aren't doing acts of wanton crime on the streets as they are in Germany and Sweden and elsewhere, it'll make them more endeared to the cause. So and everyone wins if we start vetting against theocratic fascism.
Zudi, what should the president be doing now? What should he, who should he be standing with? Who should he be talking with? What should he be doing to control this message?
Well, this is the issue, is that he wrote an executive order, gave himself 120 days, and, we're trying to make up for 8 years of dysfunction and blindness, willful blindness in Washington. So to make up for that, he talked about a commission on radical Islam. I hope it's called a commission on radical Islamism, but he needs to convene that. I think ideally it should be chaired by a Muslim. We've got reformers that signed our declaration from that include Shireen Kadosi, Ezra Nomani, Rahil Raza, Majid Nawaz in Britain, a Danish parliamentarian. There are many of us out there that can become resources for saying, this isn't a war against Islam. It's a battle within the House of Islam that we're going to take sides on. And let's reinvigorate, they called it in the last few decades, public diplomacy. But in the Cold War, it was the U.S. Information Agency. Let's start radio free, liberty in the Middle East and start putting our so-called allies on notice that, the gig's up. We realize that you might be with us on that last step to kill the terrorists, but you're certainly not with us on the previous 100 steps of radicalization, which is the ideologies that make them anti-Western, anti-Semitic, and really are fueling our own demise.
How do you give somebody the argument? They're going into the office today, and they are going to sit with some of their liberal friends who are going to start regurgitating everything that the media has said this weekend. Help them win this argument. Let's role play here. I'm going to be the liberal friend and you play the Trump supporter or the conservative, okay? And I say, hey, good job this weekend, huh? Your guy just made us look like the laughing stock of the world. Everybody's against this. This is un-American, this Muslim ban. How do you respond?
I would say you just don't get it. The most American thing, our founding fathers were Christians who loved their faith, but yet pushed back against theocracy. There's nothing more American than having a president that this is not a Muslim ban. This is not preferential for Christians. The word Muslim or Christians is not in it. It talks about persecuted religious minorities, which would include Muslims within those countries that are dissidents, that are even within the majority Sunnis that might be fighting against the government. So there is nothing more American. Yes, my guy might be getting the messaging wrong. I think he needs to be clearer about that. The implementation might have been wrong. But the bottom line is we finally have somebody in the White House who is not only on the side of the Islamists, but actually taking them on and saying that we need to be more discerning and not have this national fratricide where we allow anybody in just because they claim to be Muslim. And by the way, your side is using this as a political football to basically claim identity politics when Islam is an idea. It's an ideology. It's not a race. So stop racializing a global faith community that has a deep problem of jihadists.
Sudi, one last question. Would the Sunnis, I think it's the Sunnis, no, the Shias in Syria, do you believe they would qualify as being a religious minority that is being picked on or threatened?
That's a great question. You know, those who say that Assad and his partnership with Iran, he's a secularist, is just absurd. There are certainly Shia minorities that are persecuted by ISIS, and those would be persecuted minorities. Alawite minorities that tried to take on the regime that is Alawite is a faction of Shia Islam. So those are persecuted. But the bottom line is I'm of the belief that the Assad regime, through its cooperation with Hezbollah and Iran, are jihadists. They're just Shia jihadists, and they're batting against Sunni jihadists. So there are minority persecuted minorities on both sides of the equation in Syria. And there's actually a third side, which is really those who are just trying to be free and stop the oppression both from the Assad regime and from the ISIS militants.
Sudi, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And you can hear Reform This on the Blaze Radio Network Saturdays at noon. You just also listen to the podcast at any time on demand. Thank you, Sudi. Appreciate it. God bless.
You too. Thank you so much, Mark. Appreciate it.
Now this, 120 burglaries in Houston. Sheriffs arrested a group of 17 men. 123 burglaries in Washington State. Police arrested a group of 3 men. What are the 2 burglaries have in common? All they did to get in the house was break a rear window. They just broke one of those little panes and maybe the French door that lets you in the back. They might have broken the sliding glass, but it was a broken window every single time. Now, with SimpliSafe, they'll take care of your home. If glass breaks, the glass break sensor goes off and lets you know somebody's trying to rob your house. Somebody's coming into the house to do something that they shouldn't be doing. SimpliSafe Home Security. These guys take care of your home and your family security for $14.99 a month. That's less than 50 cents a day. Plus, you have a money-back guarantee for 60 days. You get a full refund on the system if you don't love it. No questions asked. You get a 10% discount if you go to simplysafebeck.com. 10% discount on your home security system. You order it online. There's no salespeople, nobody to upsell you, anything like that. You order it. You get a box. Within 30 minutes, it's up and running. It's really easy to use. And the police will be called if somebody tries to break into your house. SimpliSafeBeck.com. Check it out now. SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Want to see Glenn live? If you're coming to Texas, you can. Join us at Mercury Studios in Dallas for a taping of Glenn's television show. To reserve your seat, email tickets at glennbeck.com with your information. That's tickets at glennbeck.com. Mercury.
The key to having a great day starts with having a great night's sleep, and I know because I have a Casper mattress. The Casper mattress was invented with 2 high-tech foams that give you all of the support that you need and guarantee that you get the best night's sleep ever. Time magazine named Casper mattress one of the best inventions of 2015. Casper ships for free in a box so small you won't believe it holds the actual mattress, making it simple to get from your front door to your bedroom. And you try it for 100 nights risk-free. They'll come and pick it up if you don't love it as much as I love mine, and they'll refund every single dime. Once you try it, you're never going to want to sleep on anything else. Having a great day by having a great night's sleep. Casper.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn, $50 off the purchase of your mattress at Casper.com/Glenn. The promo code is Glenn. Don't forget, $50 off the purchase of your mattress. Casper.com/Glenn. Terms and conditions do apply.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I say to Stu, so what's been on your mind on the news? He said, well, I've got a good soda story. Of course you do.
Well, it's the most important thing going on in the world right now. And it's, again, you want to talk about bans? Bans that are damaging to our world?
Completely unacceptable bans?
Yeah. How about France? France has banned unlimited soft drinks and refills. Now, this is the sort of thing that concerns me and will actually affect my life. It is now illegal to sell unlimited soft drinks at a fixed price or offer them unlimited for free in France. The number of overweight or obese people in France is below the EU average, but is on the rise. The World Health Organization recommends taxing sugary drinks. Oh, well, that's a good reason for it. Linking them to obesity and diabetes, which is so stupid. I mean, all you know, we've gone over these arguments before, but it's like, it's not just drink. Like, they just they take one little category that they want to vilify. It's the old Saul Alinsky thing. They separate it, and then they just vilify it. They target it, and they try to make it into a big thing. For whatever reason, soda is the example here. But this is another example of progressive governments around the world in this case, but it's happened here many times, that decide they know what's better for you than you. This is a customer benefit. Remember, this is somewhat new in the United States. I mean, as a kid, I remember growing up, you had to pay every time you wanted another soda. Now there is the availability to walk up to the little soda machine and fill it back up, as I do every time I go, wherever I go, and get extra sodas and enjoy them. And they've taken something that a business has done to help their customer have a better experience. And because they think the customer is using it incorrectly, their choice, the government's choice, not the consumer's choice, they are taking it away. In this case, in France, but this will come here, obviously, and it has come here in a form of taxes and other things. And it's the same thing we talked about with net neutrality, in that, like, their net neutrality technically would ban what I think it's T-Mobile has done, which is give you free streaming of Hulu and Netflix and Amazon Video and all these things. A great benefit to the consumer. However, net neutrality says, well, you're not treating all companies equally when it comes to data, so you can't do that. And the activists have fought to try to get that overturned, so far unsuccessfully. But I mean, these are benefits. These are making your life better. You're getting more for your money, and yet government wants to come out and take these things away from you. And while, yes, sure, all I care about is soda, it is a much larger problem than that, and we see this in every aspect of our lives right
and
now.
And already, tastes are changing. Mm-hmm. The traditional soda is going the way of sarsaparilla, slowly.
Very slow. I mean, this is you're right. This is what a lot of people are talking about in the beverage world, if I may.
Right.
However, it's a, you know, I think what you're doing is you're getting more choices that are basically just soda, right?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The traditional soda choice is going to Little Ponies, which I hate.
Oh yeah.
And going to and getting fragmented so much, it's a thing of the past. So as they go after soda, well, what about all the other drinks that are coming out now? I mean,
for example, Coca-Cola energy drinks, which are just soda with more caffeine in it, theoretically they complain about even more than soda.
Yeah. Burst your heart.
But they'll be like, oh, well, people are moving from soda to energy drinks. What the hell do you think a Monster is? It's just a soda. It's a soda with more caffeine in it than old timey sodas.
They've done something no man has ever done before.
Okay.
They've made the worst tasting product into a successful product.
Well, I think you're more focusing on Red Bull with that analysis.
Yeah, because some of the other Monsters are not bad.
Yeah, a lot of the Monster energy drinks are
bad. Are there any of them that are good?
I would say, yeah. I mean, the Monster, they have a Monster Absolute Zero line, including the orange one, Sunrise, which
that's
absolutely
really good.
Adore.
That is
really good. There's a lemonade one. There's the citrus one is really delicious.
I need to try one. Because I had Red Bull. Oh my gosh!
No, Red Bull is distinctly different than the Monster Zero line.
Yes, the Monster Zero line is delicious.
How was Red Bull ever successful?
I don't know. My theory on this, and because you're right, it tastes like, I don't know, antifreeze.
Oh yeah, it does. It's like jet fuel or something.
And you can get to a point where you get used to it, but why would you need to? There's no reason for that.
Right.
I honestly thought maybe they marketed it. I have no evidence to back this up. They marketed it. They actually intentionally made it taste bad, so you thought you were doing something really like wow, like. I am really down in some caffeine here. Like, it's almost to stand out, they made it taste a little strange. Like, because they just had a...
It'd be interesting to find out if that's what they did.
Because whatever they did, it worked.
Because there's no way. I mean, you can make soap taste better than that.
Right. And now they've gone... Red Bull has released several other flavors, and they're much better tasting, though still not as good as, like, the Monsters or the Amps or the Venoms of the world. I mean, we could talk this all day. Is that what you want?
Not really.
Because the Venoms, they're only 99 cents, which is really what gives you the big benefit there. I mean...
They're very strong, though,
if you don't like sweet flavors, because they taste a little bit. They're almost Jolly Rancher-ish at times.
Oh, my gosh.
So they're pretty strong, but if you can deal with that, cost-effective and delicious.
Oh, good thing that I can't get a refill, but on the way home, I can stop by at my 7-Eleven and get a Monster. Twice the caffeine, twice the sugar.
Oh, much more than twice the caffeine.
Twice everything that is bad for you.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Amp and Rockstar. Now,
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Differentiates from rehab has the tea and lemonade flavor, so you're going to have a pink lemonade flavor.
But it's not actually trying to rehab off it.
No, you're not rehabbing off the energy drinks. You want to drink more out of the energy drinks, but I'm just saying, it's like maybe if you had a late night, maybe there's some other alcoholic drink, you're going to come back with a Monster rehab in the morning.
This is a fascinating conversation. It really is, but I think
I can keep going if you...
I know, but I think about 8 minutes on it is enough. Did you see what's on the Amazon bestseller list?
Yes, I think I did.
How do you feel about that?
Can you give the titles? I can't remember the title.
Sinclair Lewis, the novel "It Can Happen Here."
Yes,
which is about the fascist takeover of the United States.
Right.
And 1984.
Huh. Yes,
about the fascist takeover.
Again, like it's funny from the perspective of they were calling you a conspiracy theorist.
Boy, no kidding.
This entire time,
right?
I do find that to be fascinating.
Right.
And the Sinclair Lewis book is a book about an election against FDR where some other senator who winds up being a fascist takes control and does a lot of the things like immigration controls and the type of things that, you know, Trump is either doing or being accused of doing by the left. And that's one of the reasons why it's risen up the charts so quickly.
Fahrenheit 451 is also on the charts, as is Animal Farm. Wow. But we were crazy to think that authoritarianism could happen through executive order. We were crazy. Mm-hmm. Oh, it drives me. I can't watch television or listen to the news anymore. I really can't. I have to read it because I lose my mind. I hear them arguing on TV and I'm like, wait, suddenly you're concerned about all of this stuff? It drives me out of my mind. Can't take it.
However, we are seeing some movement. We heard a tweet from Donald Trump this morning saying that we will find out who the Supreme Court justice is, at least who he's nominating, tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern time. We think from the White House he's going to make the announcement.
Get the work on who we have and who we think it's going to give. Give me the top picks here in a second. As he's looking for that, let me just say this, and this didn't bother me at all. No, it didn't. I couldn't even read the story. The headline, travel ban is the clearest sign yet of Trump advisors' intent to reshape the country.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. You mean like when he said fundamental transformation of the United States of America, and then he was surrounded by a bunch of radicals who were hell-bent on reshaping the country and the Constitution? You mean you're concerned about something like that happening? No, that's a conspiracy theory.
Ah!
Okay, I'm over it. You have the Supreme Court justices.
There's a couple here to talk about. We've talked about Pryor a decent amount. Now, Pryor is a pretty conservative judge generally. I know you had some people who were doing the background checking and were concerned about a couple of different areas with religious freedom.
Yes.
And so that's one that has been talked about a lot.
And he is a concern to the evangelical PAC. Pryor is. And also, what's the other one?
Neil Gorsuch.
Gorsuch.
Now, Gorsuch, in reading about him fairly extensively, I think he seems like a pretty good choice. Now, there are some people who have some concerns over him.
Yeah, the religious community has a problem with Gorsuch and Pryor. The leaders of the evangelical community say that's a problem. Those two are no-goes.
Now, neither one of them, though, is exclusively bad for these cases. For example, Neil Gorsuch agreed with the correct side, in my opinion, of the Hobby Lobby case. Mm-hmm. The Little Sisters of the Poor, right, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Little Sisters, that one as well, which is another Obamacare-related case he was correct on. He's had several pretty good rulings on when it comes to religious freedom.
Yeah, he is apparently sketchy on transgenderism, the bathrooms and things like that. And the latest to come out was that last week he goes to one of these very progressive churches, and his female pastor was at the women's march, and she said, it was the first time that she really felt really connected to humanity.
Neil's like, stop talking, please, for a couple of weeks.
But that's just guilt by association. That means nothing.
Right. It may mean something, but it may not. I mean, he's who ruled, on the public displays of religion. He's ruled on the correct side of that several times. He's pretty good on things like the Second Amendment. Very good on the Commerce Clause. I was reading his stuff on the Commerce Clause was interesting and, positive. Seems to be on the right side of that as well. And this is where we got this. I love this thing where it was the Dormant Commerce Clause.
Yes.
Remember this? We talked about this earlier. The Dormant Commerce Clause isn't a particularly hot button issue, nor does it have an obvious liberal conservative fault line. But it's noteworthy that criticism of the Dormant Commerce Clause is at peace with a criticism of the right to privacy that undergirds the Supreme Court's abortion jurisprudence, as well as the other judge-made doctrines that do not have a strong connection to the constitutional text. What do you mean they don't have a strong connection to
it? They don't have any.
If they're either in there or they're not in there. Gorsuch's opinion seemed to follow the lead of people like Scalia in expressing great skepticism towards doctrines which allow judges to strike down duly enacted local laws on the basis of vague principles that cannot be found in the concrete text of the Constitution. That's just making crap up. Mm-hmm. If there's no words in there that support what you're saying, mm-hmm. you're just making crap up.
Judicial activism.
How is there another argument to that? You have a constitution. It has words in there. You can read the words in the constitution multiple ways, potentially. However, if the words aren't in there, you can't put them in there unless you amend the constitution. There shouldn't be another side to that argument. But Gorsuch seems to be on the right side of that. One that is kind of interesting from the list of 20, and we don't know for sure he's going to pick from that 20. I would be very surprised if his first pick is not from that 20.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that he might pick one of them, try to push him through. If it doesn't work, he might go outside the 20. You could totally see that happening. But I would assume his first pick is going to come from that 20. There's another Justice Thomas Hardiman, who's interesting for a couple reasons, at least. He's 51 years old. He is seen as similar to Justice Alito. And he's, been very good on the Second Amendment. He's got some really good rulings. There's some areas of concern. However, just speaking as Donald Trump, the way Donald Trump tends to think in these situations, he's worked closely with his sister. He has a good, close relationship with his sister.
Sis, who do you trust on this list?
Right, and this is the way he usually handles the people he's done mm-hmm. business with before. You know what? I trust you. I've seen you're good in these situations. He had mentioned his sister initially as the choice. No one expects that to happen. However, if his sister has good experience with a justice, and Hardiman has sided with her on several important cases, and including some cases relating to the Second Amendment, it's interesting to see if he would go that way and sort of trust his sister's judgment, assuming they do have this good relationship that has been reported. We don't know for sure. One scary thing, and I think this will scare most people in the audience, the write-up on his abortion positions was he has not weighed in directly on issues of abortion.
That's the kiss of death.
Now, again, we've seen this from several Republican presidents where they find people who have not taken views on the most controversial issues, but they're conservative, trust me. Mm-hmm. And then you push them through and they find out, wow, they're not conservative at all. particularly on those issues. So that is one that I think is concerning that he hasn't done that. But, I mean, you have to put him up near the top of the list because of that personal connection, I think. So we could see that happening as well. I mean, we have only one more day to wait, which is kind of interesting. He's moving quickly on this, which is at least we're going to find out. And then we can fight it out from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's moving quickly on a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, he's moving quickly on these executive orders, at least.
That's him, though, right? I mean, I saw a headline, Mr. President, slow down. And his response to that would be, no, keep up. You're all low energy. I'm high energy. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen criticisms of this sort of first 100 days idea where you're supposed to come out and do all these big things in the first 100 days. And I think it's to reward the campaign. And I promise you I was going to do these things. You know, of course, our system is specifically...
And you're in a honeymoon period.
Right. Yes, that's true, too. Our system is specifically designed to not encourage quick progress and change in our government. That's why there are checks and balances. It's supposed to slow the process down. Everyone complains about we don't get enough done. That's probably better for you because most of the time, yes, the stuff they get done screws you up in other ways. Now, some of this stuff I obviously agree with. This, you know, some of the stuff Donald Trump is doing. You know, he hasn't really, you know, we haven't gone deep into the legislative well yet. I think there are executive orders that you can reverse. One of the ones we were promised on day one, I believe, was a reversal of the DACA immigration edict by Barack Obama. And for some reason, we're not getting that one, which was probably the one most talked about in this context. Trump's administration has said we're going to try to work through that one legislatively and get a long-term solution to it. Hopefully that does occur. Although the long-term solution usually is part of comprehensive immigration reform. So I'm a tad nervous about that. This is an executive order that Obama did, could be easily reversed by executive order. It is not one that even people like us who don't like executive orders, generally speaking, are going to have a problem with because you're just undoing previous damage, mm-hmm, right? You're undoing an executive order. And that, to me, is a much, much more justifiable use of that than just kind of coming up with something new off the top of your head, which is what Obama was doing.
Yeah, I don't like these executive orders at all. I want them to repeal the Obama executive orders and any other order from any other president, including Reagan, that is just not constitutional. Repeal them.
Yeah, because some of it is just can be rulemaking that isn't, mm-hmm, a big deal. But when you're making major policy changes with executive order, it's wrong. Let me give you this one. This is from Hot Air. President Trump's latest executive order is as good as executive orders come. Here are some of the details. If you are an employee of the government, once you leave, your post-employment restrictions on communicating with employees of your former executive agency. So if you're in the EPA, you leave the EPA, you can't go contact your people who you used to work with and influence them to try to move them towards some company you now work for, right? Makes sense. Upon leaving government service, you won't engage in lobbying activities with respect to any covered executive branch for the remainder of the administration. So you're not going to do that at least until the next president comes in. You will not, after the termination of your employment in the United States government, engage in any activity on behalf of any foreign government. I mean, I'll agree with that. You will not accept gifts from registered lobbyists. Certainly agree with that. Here's the breakdown from Hot Air. There's still a massive problem. Trump is doing this action through executive order instead of letting it go through the legislative process.
Why is this not being...
Right.
There's
it's
no
popular.
Problem with
All
this.
Of these things would be popular.
Why wouldn't you just go through the legislative process?
The Constitution is quite clear on which branch originally comes up with the rules. From Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 14, the Congress shall have the power to make rules for the government and regulation of the land and naval forces. Trump is acting as CEO of the government, which you've brought up several times, Glenn. He is not CEO of the government. He is used to doing things his way without having others to sign off on his actions. He's taking another page from Barack Obama's playbook, but he's promising to do it right. And he said, this is a quote from a few months ago with Trump, I mean, Obama led the way, to be honest with you. I'm going to use them much better, and they're going to serve a much better purpose than he's done. Well, who decides what is good and what is bad? Is it the person in power? And I think the answer to that is yes, in this particular case. And I'm not comfortable with that standard. You know, we have a constitution set up to avoid that standard specifically.
That's why we're so battled. We're so battle-hardened now, because it's about personalities, because it's your guy or my guy, and your guy is going to destroy us, my guy is going to save us, or vice versa. And so we're at each other's throat because there's so much power being wielded by that one politician, and that's a huge mistake. First, this, are you hiring? Do you even know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. You want to find the perfect hire. You need to post your job on all of the top job websites. And now you can with ZipRecruiter. You can post up to 200 plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. And they'll find the right person for you, any city, industry, nationwide. Everybody, all of the qualified candidates fall into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. So if they have the right qualifications, they've already narrowed it down for you. And you don't have to juggle the emails or calls to your office. You just quickly screen the candidate, rate them, and then hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, you can post your job on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. One more time. Try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK. Let me go to Jenny in Texas. You're in Victoria, Texas, where there was a mosque burned down?
Yes.
Yeah, on Saturday.
Yes, ma'am. Sorry.
Tell me about it, Jenny.
I'm sorry? Hello?
Yes, you're on. Tell me about the...
Okay.
That's okay.
Okay, yeah, we had a mosque that burned down overnight. Saturday, and when we got up Saturday morning, I found out about it. But if you Google it all over the world, it's either Trump's fault for hours after signing the Muslim ban, or, we're in South Texas and we're all hicks and rednecks, and, Trump's brought out the crazy people. Nobody's waiting for the actual investigation yet. It was actually pretty, cold in South Texas.
I'm sorry to hear that, Jenny. We'll look for the cause and make sure we report it at least. Thanks. Austin,
yeah.
Pennsylvania, quickly, you're on the Glenn Beck Program.
Hi, Glenn. I think the reason why you probably never get a lobbying ban or term limits through Congress is because you have a lot of Republicans that are just as invested in this corruption.
Oh, yeah.
So I think doing it by executive order, I don't like executive orders, but I think doing it by executive order does put leverage against his own party. So if they reject it or if they fail now to codify it, it brings a lot more attention to it and it makes them look pretty bad.
But you can't do it that way. Like,
also creates a dictator.
I am the most pro-term limit person in America, probably. But I mean, if he does that through executive order, there's no way that's constitutional. When you're right, it's difficult to do. You're right. But it for a reason. These are checks and balances, and you have to go through that process. You need to amend the Constitution to get these things done.
We just have to stand on the principle of the Constitution, or it will be lost.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.